Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We have four conveniently located offices in, we're in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, New York, Albany, and Kingston. And if you're one of our regular listeners, you know we're here every Saturday morning. Some combination of the estate and elder law team to talk to you, answer your questions, and hopefully give you some interesting, thoughtful tidbits of information about estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, services that are available through the Medicaid program for home personal care services and chronic care services. So any of those things, estate administration, beneficiary designations, we know you all have questions, and so we'd love to hear you from you this morning here at the station. You can be our first caller by picking up the phone and dialing Debbie and I here at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you are outside the local calling area, you can reach Debbie and I toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. Well, I just took off my lovely Saratoga mask that Debbie, who is really fast becoming a fixture in Saratoga, was kind enough to provide many of the people in the office with Saratoga masks. And mine happens to be a lovely shade of Merlot, red wine color, with everybody's favorite horse this year, Tis the Law, which, of course, segues right into our practice as well.
That's why I got those for the lawyers. So I got all the lawyers because we usually have our track day. You know, we usually have our day. We go to the track and we have a picnic and we bet on the horses. So we couldn't do that this year. So I got all of the attorneys the Tis the Law mask because I thought that that was fitting. And then they have masks that they're selling through NYRA that the money goes to a charity. And I got those for all the employees. So everybody still gets a little feel of Saratoga.
Absolutely. Yeah, we always, usually the first Friday in August is our Herzog Law Firm Day at the Races, but not this year. Hopefully next year. Hopefully by next year, things will be a little more back to normal.
Debbie, did mine get lost in the mail? I don't seem to have seen my mask come down.
Uh-oh.
Ben, when was the last time you came to our picnic? Oh.
Okay. I have to go take a call now.
Zing, what the strings of my heart.
Okay. Anyway.
That'll show you, Ben.
Moving along.
Next year you better show up.
That's right.
I invite Ben every year, and he always has some excuse why he can't come.
Yeah, like work or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. So next time I see you, Ben, I will bring you a mask.
Thank you very much.
Whenever that is.
Yes, whenever that is. That's right.
Well, I'm planning to wear mine next Saturday, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think next Saturday is the Kentucky Derby, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Kentucky Derby is the first weekend in September now.
That's really weird.
Yep. Very, very strange.
Well, I don't think there are roses blooming in Lexington in September, so they're going to have to import them from someplace else. What do you think?
It'll be interesting to see.
Chrysanthemums. No.
They're the mums, yeah. So you could be our first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Give us a call and ask us questions. I got a text from my son, Zach, and he said, did you see what happened to Britney Spears, right? That she's got a conservator and it may end up being her sister. He goes, I think this would be something great to talk about on the radio.
Yeah, there was, I didn't hear about that recently, but there was a while ago, her father or someone was like seeking to be guardian or conservator. Is she, I don't know, is she kind of screwed. Well, Hollywood people, I guess, are all screwed up a little bit.
Well, her father was her conservator. They set it all up when she kind of went off the rails. And so she requested to remove her father, right? And so they're doing a hearing, and basically what they're saying is they may, the current manager, Jody Montgomery, is currently her temporary conservator because she petitioned to have her father removed. And so now they were saying something, and maybe her sister might step up and be a conservator for her. Kind of interesting stuff that, you know, she's a big star and she has all this money, but she needs somebody to take care of her. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, it's a real serious part of Hollywood. I mean, a lot of these people have I don't know what her particular problems are, but I think she may have had some substance abuse problems over the years, which could have, you know, scrambled her brain. But I remember back, Mickey Rooney had a similar problem, and it was a fight. I mean, you get these conservator things, and there's always a fight between, like, a parent or a spouse and then a child who... The guy that just died, Sumner Redstone, the guy that owned CBS and he owned Viacom, and he had a fight with his current wife and some of his kids over, and it's always about the money, you know. It's always, they want to control the money. I don't know how much, it's a question about how much, but these things wind up in court, and it's always a mess. It really is. I don't know.
And something to think about, too. I mean, not big stars or anything like that, but we have a lot of clients that have kids that have special needs, right? And they don't think about it, and then all of a sudden the child is 18, and then they can't make decisions for them. So people really need to think about that if you have someone that has special needs, that, you know, they're your child, that you really should petition for guardianship so that when they turn 18, you can still get their medical information, you can still talk to their doctors, you can still handle their finances and everything like that. Because if you don't, there's really nothing you can do because the doctors are not going to talk to you and, you know, kind of out on your own.
It is. In fact, I had that I did a similar thing this week with a client who, this particular client has been a client for, you know, 20, 25 years, and he just had a fairly serious medical issue. So he came in with two of his, I mean, he has a son who's probably in his late 30s, and he has another son who's like 25. And we were talking over things and stuff like that, and the son, who's the youngest son, actually is living with his dad right now and helping to take care of him. And I looked at him, and he's a 25-year-old. I said, you know, do you have a health care proxy and a power of attorney? He said, no. I said, well, you need to have one, because if something happened to you, your brother or your father would have to, they have no authority other than they can make emergency medical decisions for you, but beyond treatment for emergencies, they don't have any legal authority over you medically. They can't make sure your bills get paid. So you have to appoint someone. Otherwise, you're going to be in court, just like Britney Spears' family is, with a very expensive guardianship proceeding or conservatorship proceeding, which can largely be avoided in most instances with a very simple healthcare proxy and a power of attorney. These are pretty simple documents to put in place, and they are not expensive either. So whether you're 79 or 19, once you're over that threshold of 18, mom and dad are no longer legally entitled to make those decisions for you. And you know, in fact, you don't have to pick your mom and dad. You could pick somebody else. But it's something all these people need to think about, and frankly don't. I mean, there's the other thing I was thinking about, because I had this other problem. I mean, I sat down the other night and kind of writing down a list of issues that had come up. I recently had a situation with a family where the father was actually, he was in the hospital. He was living in an assisted living facility, had a medical emergency, and was transferred to a hospital for, I don't know, he was there for a week or 10 days. So he has two children. The one child lives here in the Capital District. The other child lives out near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So the father and the Pittsburgh son call me up, and he wants to redo his power of attorney because his current power of attorney has his wife, Now, his wife is not the children's mother. It's a second spouse. She, unfortunately, has dementia, so she's not in a position to do this anymore, right? And this happens a lot, right, Deb?
Oh, yeah, a lot.
So the spouse, who's the first choice, even in most second marriages, can't do it anymore. All right, it's not that he doesn't want her there, but she couldn't make these decisions given her cognitive impairment. So the Pittsburgh son and dad decide that the local kid is the one to do it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, have you talked to the... Oh, yeah, it'll be fine, blah, 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 blah. Well, okay, so like 3 days later, I said, well, you better call him and discuss it. 3 days later, the local kid calls me and says, wait a minute. I don't want to get involved in this at all, you know? I've had some issues with my dad for a number of years. I don't want to be involved, you know? And so there you go. So this great plan that they all had, unfortunately, they didn't run it by the son. So we wound up using the out-of-town son, which may not have been the best choice ideally, but was the only choice available under the circumstances. And these are the things sometimes, I wonder sometimes how many people, I always encourage people, I'm sure you do, to discuss these things with their children. Rather than just pick somebody at an appointment.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's Zach, my son, talk about Zach again. Whenever he broke his thumb, I took him to, he had surgery on his thumb, and whenever he came out, he goes, when I was in there, they asked me if I had a will. He goes, I have one of those, right? I'm like, did they ask if you had a living will? Because if they were asking if you had a will and they were doing surgery, that's not the person you want doing surgery on your thumb. So I said, yes, you have a living will and you have a power of attorney, and it's me. He's like, oh, okay, I'm good with that. So, you know, we did his whenever he turned 18 and went away to college because I wanted to make sure that if anything happened to him in college that I could make decisions for him. Right? So those are things that people think of. I had clients come in the other day
that you could see his grades since you were paying the tuition, right?
Well, true.
Go ahead.
You know,
I digress.
He gave me the logon code so I could check that anytime I wanted to, you know, so it wasn't a big deal. No secrets there.
You would have got it anyway. Somehow, I'm pretty sure.
I would have got it anyway. That's right. It would have been mine. Anyway, so he has documents, and I had clients in the other day that said as soon as their son turned 18, they wanted to make sure that they got documents for their son because they had a friend whose son, I think they said, was 23, and all of a sudden had a brain aneurysm. Mm-hmm. And now the mom can't make health care decisions for him, can't make financial decisions for him or anything. They're going to have to do a guardianship proceeding because here's this 23-year-old with no documents and obviously can't take care of himself. So it's smart to get things done when you're young, and then you can change them, right? You should probably look at your documents, what, every 5 years, you think?
Well, we encourage our... In fact, we actually... I mean, for a number of years now, we actually, I think in most instances, we sent out a letter to most of our clients, I think, about every... Say, you know, look, it's been 5 years since you've been in to see us. We've got your estate plan, and things, you know, things happen over the course of 5 years. Maybe nothing has happened. Maybe everything's fine. But you ought to spend 15 or 20 minutes on the phone with us just reviewing everything and making sure that the people you picked 5 years ago are the same people that you want today. Maybe your daughter was your power of attorney and your healthcare proxy 5 years ago. Maybe she's moved to Arizona, and now it would make more sense to have your son, who's still local, be that person instead. So that's the kind of stuff we can just review it over the phone. Sometimes you don't even have to come in for an actual face-to-face appointment. But we can talk you through these things so you have an opportunity to think them through and make the best decisions. I mean, I think, in picking these representatives who are going to take care of your financial affairs and your medical discussions with your physicians, I really think that the healthcare proxy is a far more serious choice than who your power of attorney is going to be. I mean, the power of attorney, as long as they're honest and they're going to steal your money, he's going to make sure your bills get paid and your health insurance premiums and your real estate taxes, and they're going to be able to discuss your affairs with the billing people at the health insurance, and they're going to be able to talk to Medicare and Social Security and any of those things. That's fairly routine for most people. But making decisions about end of life is not so simple.
No,
it's a really difficult decision, and not everybody's kid is up to it, frankly. And I think that's a really, you know, people say, well, this, she's the oldest, and do them in order of age. Well, is that really the best thing? My own personal philosophy is, for a healthcare proxy, the ideal choice is someone who is reasonably local, okay, who can actually be present at the hospital or in the doctor's office to hear what the physician is saying, to hear what the staff at the hospital is recommending. And, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, welcome to healthcare in the 21st century. I don't know if you, and I know a lot of you out there have had experiences with these things. You know, I recently, within the last year, had my wife's mother had a hospitalization for about a week at a local hospital. And when she was ready to, when they were ready to discharge her, they made a decision. The person at the hospital, have you ever heard this person at the hospital who's called a hospitalist? You ever heard that term?
Yeah, I've heard that term, yeah.
A hospitalist. Well, it's a physician at the hospital. Frankly, in my opinion, if they were any good, they'd be like in private practice, like with real doctors and stuff. So they're on the floor. And this guy is telling my wife, well, we're going to send her home. Well, this woman can barely walk across the floor from her hospital bed to the bathroom on her walker without assistance. I said, really? No. She needs to go for rehabilitation for a week or two. Well, she's not a candidate for rehab. I said, no, she's going to rehab. Well, I'm not going to. I said, then I wanted to talk to the next somebody higher up or somebody in the administrative staff. And I say, you know, you don't know anything about my mother-in-law. You haven't even read her chart. You know, you don't know what her physical condition is. You don't treat her for anything. You're not her cardiologist. You're not a rheumatoid. So they sent me this person. And they have these wonderful names for people in hospitals. This person was called the patient satisfaction representative. Now, she was an RN, lovely woman. The patient satisfaction representative shows up, and I said, lady, you have come to the right place. Where can we sit and talk? And we sat and talked for about half an hour with my wife, and wow, guess what? The result of that was the following day they discharged her for rehab,
mm-hmm.
where she went for about 10 days to 2 weeks till she could get up. And what you've got to see, this person's been laying in a hospital bed now for 5 days, all right? Pretty immobile. And when she's not in the hospital, she's sitting in a chair. You lose mobility when you're in your 90s, when you're not up walking around regularly. And it takes a few weeks to get back into the routine. So I don't want to bore, but these decisions, if the healthcare proxy for my mother-in-law was not my wife, who lives here in Albany, but rather her other son who lives in Atlanta, Georgia, he couldn't have done the same job that my wife and I were able to do by being here, by being present, by being able to be in the hospital and actually have these discussions face-to-face with people and get my mother-in-law the kind of care and rehabilitation that she needed to go home safely. So, you know.
Well, everyone needs an advocate.
They do. They do. Particularly in the healthcare system today, because they just run roughshod over you and they tell you what's going to happen. And most people don't have the wherewithal to know how to maneuver through these sometimes very aggressive, demanding people who are basically telling you, you're going home. Well, you know, sometimes that's not the best decision.
True. It's true. And we get a lot of calls from our clients' kids that say, you know, this is what they're trying to do. What should we do? And do we have to fill this out? Do we have to do that? And that's what we're there for, right? We're always going to mm-hmm. take the calls and be able to walk people through things. And if it's something that needs to be done, we'll meet with the family and get things taken care of. But we don't know what we don't know. You know, it's if you come to us 6 months later and say, well, this is what happened, and now all of a sudden this, you know, there's nothing we can do. But if there's a situation where you call us in advance and we can give you suggestions as what you need to do and hopefully help you through it.
We can. I mean, we often we'll have a telephone conversation with a discharge planning person at a hospital where we're discussing with what's going on. And there are, there's an appeals process set up within the healthcare system through Medicare where you can appeal a discharge decision. Now, unfortunately, the whole appeals process is stacked in favor of the hospitals, all right? So invariably, you're probably going to lose, all right? But mm-hmm. once in a while, we're actually able to get some physician outside of the hospital environment, you know, that has actually treated the patient, to write a letter recommending medically that something else happened than what the discharge planning people are recommending. That doesn't happen too often, but it's always worth a phone call to try to find out. If you're really concerned about the medical recommendations for your family member, because in this day and age, with the insurance system, the Medicare system, and the secondary insurance system, a lot of these decisions, frankly, are motivated by cost rather than quality of care decision-making. And I know there are all these doctors and nurses in the hospitals will dispute that, but the fact of the matter is it is a major consideration in the great scheme of things. So, you know. Be careful.
We'd love for somebody to give us a call so we could sit here and talk and rant all day, but we'd like a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. They can be the very first caller. So I have a question for you, Harry. Have you seen an uptick of people calling that are concerned about the changes to community Medicaid as of October 1st?
Wow, have I? I mean, we certainly have in this office. We have had a lot of, an onslaught of personal care service appointments and things during the month of August. I'll tell you what I've had a lot of, too, and I just had a few of them this week in our Kingston office. because we've been out there basically telling people about these, the changes that are hitting October 1st, I had an appointment in our Kingston office on Wednesday where the family, the mother came in with her daughter who lives here, or lives in the Kingston area, and her son who lives out of town in another state. And we had a conference call about the fact that mom, she doesn't need services right now. She probably might not. She might or she might not. She's sort of borderline in terms of qualifying for personal care services. But she has maybe $100,000 of bank deposits that aren't in her trust. I set up a trust for her, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. And her house and some of her assets are in the trust, and they've been there for a long enough time that they qualify not only for personal care services, but also for chronic care services. But I said, why don't we move some of this $100,000? Let's just move it. You leave it at the same bank. We'll just open up a second account in the name of the trust, and let's move $50,000 or $60,000 of it into the trust before October 1st. Because guess what? After October 1st, you're going to be penalized for that transfer at the rate of about $11,000 a month, right? Mm-hmm. So if we transferred $80,000, we're going to suffer 7-8 month penalty for home care services starting October 1st. Now, The new rules are not kicking in till January, right? Okay. But in January, when the new rules kick in, they're going to look back 3 months to October 1st. So, and if you've transferred any assets between October 1st and January 1st, you're going to suffer the same transfer penalty that you do if you were applying for nursing home chronic care and made transfers within 5 years. And over a period of 2.5 years, they're going to phase in what will ultimately be a full 2.5 year look-back penalty. And this is for home care services, not chronic. Chronic is still going to be 5 years, not 2.5. So and guess what? Monday's August 31st. So we had about a month, all right? We have a remaining open window of about 30 days to transfer some assets to a trust and not suffer a penalty. This woman may not need, you know, in January, but maybe a year from January, guess what? She might need services by then. So if we go and apply in January of 2022 or sometime in late 2021, if she transfers these assets, they're not going to be penalized because they were put in her trust before October 1.
Right. It's it's confusing. It really, really is confusing. The whole situation is something that we tell people they really should sit down with one of us and go over everything and see what the possibilities are. I mean, like you said, if she doesn't really need care now, then she should get her assets transferred just in case, right?
You can't get the services now unless you need care. In other words, you go through the financial application process, which is fine, but then if you go through that and then come out, at that point they do an evaluation, right? Somebody comes out and does an evaluation as to whether or not you qualify for services. Currently, to get those services, you've got to lack two of the five activities of daily living, right? Unless you have a dementia diagnosis, all right, in which case you're probably going to be eligible for some services, all right, because of that. But guess what? After January, you're going to have to lack three of the activities of daily living rather than two to qualify for the same services. So come the first of the year when they implement this thing, you're going to have to be sicker than you are now to get the same services.
Well, I kind of used your mother-in-law as an example when I talked to people about how in the beginning, whenever she was on community Medicaid, that she only needed a few hours, and then by the time she was full on,
right,
she needed, 10 hours a day she had?
Yes, 70, yeah, it's 10 hours to 70 hours a week. So we had 10 hours a day at the end, the last 6 months that she was receiving services. But she'd been on the program for like 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. And when she first went on the program back in 2016 or 2017, she was still pretty independent, living in an independent, not an assisted living facility. She was walking around on a walker, but she could get downstairs to the dining room. She could sit in a coffee shop with her friends. You know, she could go to bingo or the movies or whatever. And she was relatively independent. But then, you know, as the years went on and she was in her late 90s, she became increasingly frail and needed increasingly greater services. So at that point, she's already in the system. She's already approved for the services. So when you need to go from 20 hours to 40 hours, you don't have to reapply. You don't file a new Medicaid application. You're already on community Medicaid. What you need to do is talk to, and part of the home care program, what happens is you enroll in something called an MLTC, which is a managed long-term care company. All right, and these are basically, they're large insurance companies who are under contract with the state social services department, and they manage the program for the state. And so somebody comes, it's a nurse generally will come out and evaluate you. So my wife would call and say, look, my mom, she needs more than 20 hours a week. She needs 30 hours a week or 40 hours a week. So they'll come out and evaluate her. Now, they might not give her the whole 40. Maybe they'll only give her 36. But the fact of the matter is you can get the hours increased through the program without a complete reapplication process. And that's a relationship you'll develop with the representative from your MLTC. It's not easy. I mean, the reason, you know, you talk about these, it's a complicated process getting it going and keeping it going. But it works really well once it's up and running. That's all I can say. And, you know, and we've had the last three, four years of personal experience with it. And it's a marvelous program. New York, to its credit, has one of the most comprehensive home care programs in the entire country. And we should be really grateful for that, because the long-term effect of that is it keeps our families home longer. And I think we're about up to the break time, aren't we, Ben?
I was just waiting for you to stop talking, Harry. I was waiting for you to finish your thought.
I'm going to have to butt in because sometimes they don't stop talking.
That's okay. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston,
our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back to the second half hour of the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie, I've been chatting with you for the last half hour about a whole bunch of different things on advanced directives and healthcare proxies and hospital issues and the community Medicaid program. So welcome back. We would love to hear from some of you this half hour. And you can call in the station by pouring yourself another cup of coffee and picking up the phone and dialing Debbie and I at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Outside our local calling area, you can reach us toll-free, 100-WROW-590. Okay, so what else do you want to kick around?
So it's interesting that people think that their assets are just going to go to their next, you know, to their husband or their wife or their next of kin. And it's interesting because I had a phone call from a client that I talk about, but I hadn't heard from him in years. Basically, what happened was the husband and wife, married, couple of kids, the husband had a job where he felt that he could get sued. So they had put the house in originally just in the wife's name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the wife passed away.
A lot of people do that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they came to us afterwards, just saying. I didn't do any of this estate planning. So they came to us afterwards because when mom died, right, like I said, she had two kids. And so whenever they looked and they said, okay, she has a husband and then she has two kids. So he's going to get what? He's going to get $50,000 and a third, right? And then the kids get the rest.
Right.
Half. A third is the right of election.
She didn't have a will? It's an intestacy?
It's an intestacy. No will. So they're looking at it, and the daughter says, I want my money. And the son is like, it's mom and dad's house. Right?
Oh, my heavens. Okay. Yeah. That happens, so, too, sometimes.
You know, and so, yeah, I didn't mean to say a third. I meant to say half. Anyway, so it's going to be half and half. So they end up, the daughter takes them to court. So, and they ended up calling me because they wanted to do estate planning to make sure that if anything happened to dad, that the sister wouldn't be in control. So fast forward, you know, like I said, we didn't represent them in the whole estate process. I did the estate planning for dad. So fast forward, I get a call from the son that says that they were tied up in court for 3 years. Fighting with his sister for mom and dad's house, and that the court allowed the father to sell the house, and now the sister wants her money. And
is this the father's child?
Yes.
Or from, oh my God, this is actually her father, not a stepfather.
Nope, that's
holy
her father.
Holy cow. Okay. Wow. Jeez.
Yeah.
All right, keep going.
So she wants her money, and so the father is saying, well, he doesn't want to gift it to her, because if he gifts her the money, then, you know, if he had to go into the nursing home, then that money would be counted against him. And I was talking to the son, and I'm like, well, it's not really a gift if the court said that he actually has to give her the money because the mother died intestate, right, and had this house in her name. And it's just crazy. And she's just, like, demanding that she wants her money, and she wants her money now. So the court, I guess, never put the house in the father's name, but they allowed him to sell it out of the estate. And so now the daughter wants her money. And people don't think about things like that. And they also don't think about the fact that even if you have a will, right, they have to notify your intestate distributees, right? So even if she, let's just say mom had a will and she left everything to dad, right?
Well, most people wills do that, who are married, even if they have kids,
So then the daughter could have come in, because they would have had to, she would have had to sign a waiver, right, that said that the will could be probated and everything's fine, she still would have had an opportunity to come into the court and say, no, 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 you know, that mom wanted me to have money. And she could have brought a court proceeding to try to overthrow the will. I mean, that's why we always try to push people to try to do a trust or make sure everything's joint or make sure everything has a beneficiary so you don't end up with this kind of situation. And especially with, I had a person that I met with this week that he has, I won't go into the whole sordid mom and dad past, but he has three half-sisters. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't have, he doesn't have a child, he has a significant other that have been together forever, right? And he wants to make sure everything goes to her because he doesn't have a will. And if he did, if he died today, right, then everything that he has, if it's not joint or beneficiary with his significant other, is going to go to those three half-sisters.
That's right.
Harry
That's
and
right.
Debbie? We have a caller, and then after this caller, we have a second caller. So we have Maureen and Nassau.
Oh, good morning, Maureen.
Good morning. I have a simple question.
Okay.
I hope. I keep getting all this stuff about Medicare. I'm going to be turning 65 in November, and everybody says I have to apply, but I'm still working. I'm not going nowhere. I'm wondering if it's against them to keep, they keep saying, oh, you got to, or else you're going to get in trouble. I'm trying to find out, do I need to, and what would I do? Because like I said, I'm working full time.
Well, here's what I think you should do. You should apply for Medicare Part A.
Okay.
Part A covers hospitalization, all right?
Okay.
And there is no premium for that. They don't take any money out of your check. You don't have to pay for it. It's free. All right? Now, as long as you're working and you're covered under a health insurance plan that is essentially actuarially equivalent to what Medicare Part B would cover, Part B of Medicare covers doctor bills, laboratory tests, that sort of thing, okay? Now,
okay,
there's a premium for that. They take $142, $148 a month out of your Social Security check, or you have to pay for it, all right? As long as you're working and covered by another plan, you can defer your enrollment in Part B and not be penalized, all right?
Okay.
So you'd enroll in Part A, which is hospitalization, and that would be your primary. Medicare would be your primary, and your employer insurance would be secondary on that. And then you can continue your Part B. Well, you can continue your health insurance coverage through your employer if you choose to.
Okay.
Or you could enroll in Part B and drop your, I mean, I would look at the cost. I mean, let me tell you, just personally, so I've been through a lot of these things because I'm older than Debbie and Dave, you know, and Jane Marie. So I've had some personal experience that Debbie and David haven't. They're not old enough to have had these experiences yet. But when I turned 65 here in the law firm, I was covered by the law firm's insurance policy. All right. Now, when I looked at it, Part B of Medicare provided basically the same or better coverage than I had through the law firm. We have a really good plan, all right? And it was a lot cheaper, okay? So I dropped the employer plan, and I switched over to Part B. But that was because of the numbers. You know, it made more sense because I wasn't losing any coverage, and I was saving a couple of $1,000 a year in insurance premiums. But, you know, you could look at that, and there are people who, you know, who do specific advice about these things. But that, in a nutshell, will just give you maybe some ideas about what to look for there.
Okay, because like I said, I turned 65 in November, and I'm still running circles around the kids that I work for me, you know.
I bet you do. Yeah, they don't have the same work ethic that you do.
You know, I mean, I'm a manager to a convenience store, so I mean, I'm working like 60, 70 hours a week.
Sure.
And these kids are standing here, how do you do this? But I just do.
You're used to it, yeah. Well, so, yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure. So I better sign up at least for A to start with. Is that correct?
I think you would. And call. You know, you can call the Medicare office if you can ever get through to anybody. You can sign up on. In fact, you can sign up. You could probably sign up now. You can enroll in Medicare, I think, up to 3 months before your birthday in November. So, like, next week is September. So,
yeah.
You could do it online. And then there's a number to call, I think, if you have questions and stuff like that. All right?
Okay. I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.
All right. And right behind that, we have a caller and then another caller. So we've got two on the coming up. So we have Bob in Clifton Park.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Debbie. Good morning, Harry. My question is, both my wife and myself created a revocable trust years ago. My wife since passed away, and her trust created a marital trust. My question is, when I pass away, what happens with her marital trust and the assets that are in there? Can you explain what happens?
Well, it's going to go out to whomever the beneficiaries are that are named in her marital trust. So whenever, now have you been taking the interest and the distributions from her trust, or are you just going to let it sit
there?
Yes,
no, it's been coming, rolling over to my trust.
Okay, so whenever you pass away, her trust will terminate and your trust will terminate, and then all the assets will go out to whomever the beneficiaries are.
And they're probably the same in both trusts. You have kids?
Yes.
Yeah, probably. So on your death, there won't be a trust because, you know, the trust is only set up in the estate of the first person who dies. But on the second death, your trust will pour out to your kids. And I didn't read your wife's trust, but undoubtedly at that point, if you read through the document, it'll say on the death of the second spouse, the marital trust terminates. And the remainder will be paid out to whoever, your issue then living, or your children. Okay?
Now, does it pour out to, as the, well, the way my, does it actually go into my trust and then go out, or actually just stay with the way she set up her trust years ago?
Normally, we did your estate plan, or someone else did?
Debbie did, actually.
If we did it, it would, your wife's trust would pour out directly to the kids. It wouldn't go into your trust first, normally.
Okay,
I mean, it could go that way, but that's not the way we would normally write it. So are her assets invested in the marital trust? They're in, what, a brokerage account or a bank account someplace?
Yeah, bank accounts.
So whoever is the trustee right now, the trustee of your wife's marital trust is probably you and one of the children, right?
Correct.
So when you pass away, obviously you won't be a trustee anymore. So the child who is the trustee will then be able to simply distribute the funds in however many shares there are, one share for each child.
Okay. Could I?
And the same thing. And the same thing with yours. You're the trustee of your revocable trust now. If you look in whatever paragraph it is toward the end, it'll say on your death, or if you become incapacitated, one of the kids, probably the same kid, will succeed you and become the trustee.
Correct.
But the great advantage you've done by setting up a revocable trust is, on death, you don't have to. They're not going to have to probate in court because your property's passing through a trust rather than through a will. So they're going to save a whole bunch of money. They're not going to have to pay nearly as much to collapse the trust because they don't have to go into court and be appointed executor and do a court-ordered and court-supervised distribution proceeding. So,
One more question. Could I actually go in and change the distribution of her marital trust, being a trustee, or not?
No.
You cannot. Passed away, it's set. Once you can change it on yours, but you can't change it on hers. Hers is set whenever she passed away.
Okay.
Well, let me say that there is an indirect way that you could, if you wanted to change the proportions, all right, I've done this in a couple of occasions where we had a marital trust that was fixed. That once your wife passed away, her trust is cast in stone. It cannot be amended further with court approval, but you wouldn't get it. Your trust, however, can be amended. So sometimes if you want to create a distribution difference, you can achieve the same goal by amending your trust to basically affect the same distribution scheme that you could have. It's a little complicated. Call me, all right? If you want to do that, give me a call next week, all right? Too complicated for the radio, all right?
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the information. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening.
Welcome. Have a great weekend.
All right, and we have Barbara in Ballston Spa.
Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. I find this conversation very informative, but kind of depressing in the sense that I think you partially have answered it, but I set up a revocable trust with you. I have co-trustees out of town, and with this information, what good is a revocable trust? When you pass, because I don't know all this information about October and all of that. I don't know if that goes into this situation or not, but I just like a little,
do you have a good answer
that I can understand, I guess. And I am understanding it, but I don't know what my options are, I guess.
Do you have a revocable trust right now?
Yes.
Do you have a revocable trust? You're your own trustee?
With you.
Right. So you're your own trustee, right? Or the kids are the
Well, I have co-trustees.
Okay, so it's an irrevocable trust.
No. No, it's a revocable trust.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, do you have long-term
care? And my children are out of town, so that's another.
But are your kids the trustees, or are you the trustee?
Well, I
all three of you trustees.
My two children to take over.
I think we'd have to look at the document. We'd have to look at the document to see which.
I have a revocable trust with you.
Okay, so
that's the best I can explain.
Okay, so if you have a revocable trust, then your assets, so you can go in and do whatever you want to with them, right? You can write checks and you can do whatever you want.
Yes.
So when we're talking about the stuff for October 1st, if you wanted to make sure that those assets were protected, then you could actually amend your revocable trust and make it irrevocable so that those assets wouldn't be available. But I think that you and I should probably have a talk, or you and Harry should have a talk, to figure out what exactly it is that you need to do and what your goals are. We could pull your file. You could give us a call on Monday, and we could pull your file and go over everything and see if it makes sense to amend your trust to make it irrevocable and move the kids up as co-trustees, or, you know, what exactly the situation is. I mean, revocable trust avoids probate. And an irrevocable trust avoids probate, and it protects your assets. So depending on what you would need as far as care and everything going forward, we'd want to look at your documents and do whatever's best for you. And like you said, they live out of town, but that doesn't mean that they can't be your agents. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of kids, a lot of people's kids live out of town, and they can still be your trust. Do you have long-term care insurance, ma'am?
Oh, yes.
You do?
Not fantastic, but yes.
Okay. Well, I think what Debbie's saying is maybe you should at least have a phone conference with whichever of us set up your trust originally and review that in connection with whatever your current long-term care coverage is, because if it's adequate with your income to provide the care, you may be okay, but it'd be a good idea to review that. I don't know, how many years ago did we set up your, how long ago did you set up your trust?
3 years ago.
Well, it'd be worth a phone conference, just, you know, spend 15, 20 minutes on the phone with you. All right. We're not going to send you a bill for that conference. Okay. I mean, if we're going to do some work and do some paperwork, we'll have a bill for you, but we'll talk to you on the phone. You won't get a bill.
I expect that.
So I think, because we were talking about this early on when the show first started, the first part of the show, we were talking about the fact that you should really review this stuff at least every 5 years. And then, you know, if you've got a question now And it would be appropriate to look at your long-term care coverage and see how much it covers, because, you know, these days, what are nursing homes are like $500 a day, private pay. So we need to see what your insurance would pay for, how long it would pay for it, and then it might be appropriate to make some changes at this point. But we got to talk about that first.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
No problem.
Good week.
You know, it's great that people have questions, that we got some phone calls. I think that's great. And if you want to be our next caller, you can give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And we'd like to answer your questions. If you're already our client, you can always give us a call at the office. Stacy can put some time on our calendar so that we can give you a call. And we are... the offices are open. You know, like Harry said, he was in Kingston. I've been in Saratoga, and I've been in Clifton Park and Albany. And, you know, we do have precautions. We're doing the questions. I have a client that was supposed to come in on Monday. And when Stacy called to confirm, they talked to about how one of the father's aides may have been diagnosed with COVID. They've been tested for COVID. So he's like, I'm not coming in, right? So we do ask the questions because we want to make sure that we protect our employees and that we protect our clients.
I just had a test last Friday. I had to have a medical procedure done this week. And so before they would do the medical procedure, I had to go last Friday and have a COVID test. And I was surprised. And I flunked the test. I was negative. And
Harry and Debbie?
Yes.
We have another caller. We have Jerry in Clarksville.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Jerry.
Yes, good morning. I have a question back to transferring funds. How do I transfer funds into an existing trust?
So do you have an irrevocable or a revocable trust?
Oh, gee, I don't know which.
Okay, so did we do your documents for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Who's the trustee? So, are you the trustee or is one of your kids the trustee?
One of my children is the trustee.
Okay.
So whenever you did your documents, you probably got what are called memorandums of trust. And if not, you can give us a call on Monday, and we can send them out to you. And what you would do is you would go to the bank, and they're going to have the trustee sign the signature cards for the trust. So if you already have an account that's set up in the trust, then you can just transfer money in. But if you're setting up a new account, the trustee is going to have to sign the signature card.
Yeah, no, I already have an account.
Okay. So then you could take money out of whatever accounts that you have, and you could put it into that account that's in the name of the trust. It shouldn't be an issue.
Just like a regular deposit.
Just like a regular deposit.
Yeah, you could just write a check. You could just write a check payable to your trust.
To the trust.
Jerry's trust. And,
yeah.
And the bank will deposit it if you have check writing privileges on that account. Or if you went to the bank, you could sign a withdrawal order authorizing
right.
the transfer of some. You don't have to transfer the whole account. You could transfer some of it or all of it into the trust account. And as Debbie said, if you have an existing trust account already set up, you don't even have to take your trustee child to the bank with you.
Yeah, no, I do. Yeah. Okay, well, that makes it simple. I just wanted to know what the procedure was. And the thing is, I should have done this 2 years ago when I established the trust. I didn't.
Well, we say better late than never, you know?
Right.
There's no time like the present to do these things, yeah.
Right. No, I'll get to it this week.
All right. Well, if you have any questions when you're at the bank, you know, give us a call. Somebody will be here to answer your question, all right? It shouldn't be a problem.
Okay, great.
All right?
Great. Yep. Thanks, now.
Take care now.
And we have another caller. We have Scott in Nassau.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. Hi, Debbie and Harry.
Hi.
I have a quick, I hope this is quick. I have no children. I'm retired at 62. I'm not getting Social Security. I don't have a lot of money, but I'd like to do, my doctor recommends the healthcare proxy regardless. you know, all I have is really is life insurance as far, and my pension doesn't carry on to anyone because I'm not married anymore.
Yeah.
So I should probably do the health care proxy, right, to my youngest sister, something like that.
Right. If you want her to make your health care decisions, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, one of them, because my other two siblings are older than me. And, uh-huh. you never know who's going to, you know, die or whatever first, but so...
Yeah, you should do that, and you should also have a power of attorney.
POA, right? For
the healthcare proxy, the healthcare proxy can just make medical decisions. So they can talk to your doctors and make decisions about care and treatment, but they can't get a copy of your hospital bill or talk to your insurance company or Medicare. So that you need a power of attorney. They need a power of attorney to do the financial side of everything.
I got you. POA is important. Okay.
It's very important.
Okay. Do you know insurance companies? I've read where, I mean, I'm not going to do it, but somebody that commits suicide, are they still payable sometimes? I heard
what,
that
life
like,
insurance?
Some of the payment. Yeah, life insurance.
Yeah.
Within 2 years of your death?
Yeah, there's a 2 year incontestability. After 2 years, if you commit suicide within 2 years of getting the policy, they won't pay it out. But after 2 years, it's incontestable. So
really?
If you commit suicide 3 years after you get the policy, the beneficiary will still get the money.
Okay. All right, that basically does it right now, and it's running late on time. I thank you, folks.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a great weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of interesting questions, Harry. I'm glad that we got some callers. It's always more fun to have callers that ask questions than it is just to talk back and forth.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree. It was too early. I think this morning, you know what happened? It's a rainy, damp, yucky day, and I think everybody stayed in bed the first half hour, and they woke up.
Right. I would have liked to see.
Hey, next week, September. Are we doing any webinars this in September, or what's the deal?
Well, we always have webinars. We have Webinar Wednesday. Oh, sounds like that's the end of the show. Go to our website at www.herzoglaw.com, and you can sign up for any of the webinars. You guys have
a great
weekend,
everybody.
Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.